Well, thank you, Carl, for that invitation. I mean, my introduction. I mean, Matt.
Maranatha Penn. You talk about duct tape. I was known as the duct tape expert. Even the people at Northwest Airline in Green Bay call me their duct tape buddy. And I was in the Northwest Club back before Delta bought them, Minneapolis. And I always had my duct tape wallet. And I had my Elite card, my Platinum Elite card, and I laid it on top of them. I said, I'd like to look at an upgrade here. And she said, I think you need a new wallet. I said, no, this is just broken in. And I said, the only problem I have is it sticks in my pants on hot days. And they said, oh, thanks for getting our day started right. We're normally getting chewed at by someone. But we did. I remember we were in a meeting in right on the border of North Carolina and Georgia. And the dad asked me if I had my wallet with me. The pastor, we were eating lunch. And I pulled it out and I said, yes, I don't go anywhere without it. And about a half hour later, we're sitting there after we eat. We're just talking in this. Six-year-old boy comes out of his bedroom with a new leather wallet that he had gotten for Christmas. And he said, I want you to have this. He felt so sorry for me that this poor guy had this duct tape wallet. So then our staff made a presentation to me just when I was getting ready to leave for a trip. And they had gave me a new briefcase. And it was a pair of briefs with a duct tape, two duct tape handles on it. So I took it to the airport, to Green Bay. And I said, look at the beautiful gift that our staff just gave me. And I said, the only problem is the pencils are falling out the legs. So I said, I'm going to have to duct tape them closed. But when there would be a storm, I knew I wasn't going to, the flight would not leave and I was going to have to rebook. Well, I get there. They said, done. You don't have to talk. We take care of our duct tape buddy. They already had rebooked me, so. But I was born in the tip of Upper Michigan. I don't know how many of you have ever been up there. Way at, any, to Copper Harbor. Any of you ever been up to Copper Harbor, Michigan? That's where I was raised just before Copper Harbor there. And we are kind of bushwhackers, and we did a lot of hunting, trapping, and I had to laugh. There was this old Finnish lady, and I'm a Finn from way back. She had been given a mink coat in a family inheritance. Her aunt had willed her this mink coat, and she never wore it. It was like putting whipped cream on an onion, so she never put it on. Well, 20 below zero, one day she said, I'm going to wear that to church. And so she got in the lobby of the church and an animal rights activist came to her and said, what unfortunate creature died for you to wear that? She said, my dear Aunt Emma. And so that answered that question, didn't it? Well, thank you, Matt, for the gracious introduction. I'm going to go on the theme of happiness tonight. How do you have a happy atmosphere? The thing I remember most, when Pastor was pastoring in Ohio, the church there, and then when I was here 2 years ago, the thing that stood out in my mind most was the atmosphere of happiness and rejoicing among the people here. And as I look at the opportunity, I think I'm hitting the right button here. It's on the back screen. You'll have to look the other direction. Oh, here it is. I thought, boy, you're going to all have to go and get that massage thing that we just saw on that. I want to look at a passage in 1 Kings. I won't take long, what Henry VIII told his seventh wife, I won't keep you long. And how do you have a happy atmosphere? 1 Kings chapter 10. We know Solomon had become king. I don't think David expected his son Solomon to be the next king. I think David actually thought that perhaps it would be one of his warrior sons. And David became greatly concerned for Solomon because he saw him as a very tender person. The load that he would carry would be very heavy. And when you read 1 Chronicles chapter 29, you see David's heart being poured out to his son. Know the God of your father, Solomon. Know your father's God. You have a great responsibility ahead of you. And you remember when Solomon became king, God gave him, appeared to him in a dream. And do you remember what that dream was? Solomon, I will give you anything you ask for. And you remember what Solomon requested? He said, I want wisdom. I have a responsibility given to me. I do not know how to go out or how to come in. God, grant thy servant wisdom that I might carry on the way you worked through my father David. And now we see the pickup of that in 1 Kings chapter 10. The wisdom of Solomon was vastly known. The riches of Solomon, greatly known. In fact, Solomon's annual income equated to 25 tons of gold. If you could accumulate that in your mind, what that would be. And now we see in chapter 10 and verse 1, and when the queen of Sheba heard of the fame of Solomon, now note this, concerning the name of the Lord, she came to prove him with hard questions. In other words, everything she had heard of Solomon, she attributed that to the fact of what his God did for him as David's God did for him. And I thought, what a testimony that is. And what an awesome responsibility was given to Solomon in that time. Unfortunately, we look at the unraveling of Solomon's character. But here we find everything that was true about him was a praise to his God. Now, Queen of Sheba came, verse 2, to Jerusalem with a very great train, with camels that bear spices and very precious gold, stones. When she had come to Solomon, she communed with him of all that was in her heart. Solomon told her all her question. There was not anything hid from the king which he told her not. And when the queen of Sheba had seen all Solomon's wisdom and the house that he built, the meat of his table, the sitting of his servants, the attendance of his ministers and their apparel, and his cupbearers, and the ascent by which he went up into the house of the Lord, there was no more spirit in her. And she said to the king, it is a true report I heard in mine own land of thy acts and of thy wisdom. Howbeit, I believed not the words until I came and mine eyes had seen it. And behold, a half was not told me. Thy wisdom and prosperity exceeds the fame which I heard. Now the Queen of Sheba makes a journey of 1,000+ miles with a great camel train. She came with 4.5 tons of gold as a gift to Solomon. Now, she had heard in her land of what she perhaps considered a country bumpkin. How could anybody have this much wisdom and have that much riches? And that be true. She didn't believe it. Then she heard Solomon had a navy. You read that in the previous chapter there in chapter 9. Solomon had a navy. He had ships on the ocean that went down into the Nile. And she thought, if this is true, I had better get some trade relationship. Because those big timers, they didn't think anything but money. And if this is true, I had better set up some trade relationships. And she came and she proved him with hard questions. And I don't think these were knock-knock jokes. I mean, I think she got with her staffers there in Sheba and probably said, give me the toughest things that I can ask this guy. It might be some riddles. It might be some unsolved things. It might be some things that she herself wanted to know that she had never had an answer for. But whatever it was not a simple thing. Well, she saw the riches he had and the sitting of his servants, and she said, I cannot believe what I am seeing. But there's something yet more amazing that she noticed. Look in verse 8 in your napkins there. Thank the Lord for cell phones with the Bible on it. What's it say in chapter 8 and verse 1? Chapter 10 and verse 8. Happy are thy men. Happy are these thy servants. Happy servants. That's an oxymoron. That's like a relaxed college president. That's like, these two words don't go together. But you know what she noticed? All of these world leaders had servants, but they were not happy campers. They went, they did their job. What made her notice the happiness of Solomon's people? Happy are these thy servants which stand continually before thee, that hear thy wisdom. Blessed be the Lord thy God which delights in thee. Again, she exalts Solomon's God. She was not a believer. But she thought, this is amazing what his God has done for him. Blessed be the Lord thy God which delights in thee to set thee on the throne of Israel, because the Lord loved Israel forever. That's a good thing for us to remember today, by the way. The Lord loved Israel forever. Therefore made he the king to do judgment and justice. And she gave the king 120 talents of gold and of spices and very great store and precious stones. There came no more such abundance of spices as these which the queen of Sheba gave to Solomon. Now, that triggered my curiosity. I was flying actually to speak at an educator's banquet down south. I was on the plane reading, doing my regular through the Bible reading, and I came to this passage, and that stood out in my mind, happy are thy servants. And I thought, I wonder what made that happen. Now, let's go to chapter 12. The kingdom splits over taxes, the heavy tax burden that Solomon had laid on the people, and then Jeroboam takes the north, Rehoboam takes the south. There is a division in the kingdom. The kingdom divides. And now we see Rehoboam takes over the south. Verse 1 of chapter 12, and Rehoboam went to Shechem, for all Israel were come to Shechem to make him king. This was now to be king over Judah. And it came to pass when Jeroboam, the son of Nebat, who was yet in Egypt, heard of it, for he fled from the presence of King Solomon, and Jeroboam dwelt in Egypt, that they sent and called him, and Jeroboam and all the congregation of Israel came and spake unto Rehoboam, saying, thy father made our yoke grievous. This is a tax burden. Thy father made our yoke grievous. Now therefore make thou the grievous service of thy father, and his heavy yoke which he put upon us lighter, and we will serve them. And he said unto them, depart yet for 3 days, then come again to me. And the people departed. Now, here's Rehoboam. He is given a challenge, and so he wants advice. So he gets the old men who worked for his dad, the ones who worked for Solomon. And he said, give me 3 days on this. So what he did in those 3 days is he met with the old men who had worked for his dad, and Rehoboam consulted with the old men that stood before Solomon while his father yet lived, and said, how do you advise that I might answer this people? In other words, what advice do you give me? You worked for my dad. What advice are you giving me? Now, here are the three quick things I want to share with you tonight. How do we see this happy atmosphere? Number one, they answered and said, if you will be a servant unto this people and will serve them. Principle number one is the key of servitude. That is such a powerful principle all throughout the Bible. Leadership is servitude. Moses, my servant. Joshua, my servant. Abraham, my servant. And the thing that stood out in these men who had a walk with God is they were driven by a servitude attitude, a servant mentality. And I think when I look at this ministry, when I look at Cornerstone, this church, and I think, not Cornerstone, Crosspoint, yes, I knew there was some point in there somewhere. I was telling him, I can't remember names. Somebody suggested I take that Sam Carnegie course, and I did, and that didn't help. They said, well, I thought it was Dale. Yeah, Dale, that's right, Dale Carnegie. But you look at Crosspoint, you look at the atmosphere, you look at the attitude that is here in this mentality. How do you have a happy attitude? You know what I sense? There is an attitude of servitude. That comes out of Philippians chapter 2 mentality, the kenosis mentality, that is Christ thought it not robbery to be equal with God, made himself of no reputation, took on him the form of a servant, humbled himself, became obedient unto death, even the death of the cross, wherefore God has highly exalted him and given him a name above every name, that at the name of Jesus every knee should bow, every tongue should confess that Jesus Christ is Lord to the glory of God the Father. And when you stop to think, what should be the thing that would drive us would be the attitude of servitude. And it's interesting that servants will normally serve, but they will not normally serve with a happiness mentality. And it's interesting that this was pointed to, if you will serve them. I remember one time years ago, I was talking to Ardell Jaquo, when he was head of our education department. And I said, Ardell, I want you to analyze the highest pressure points for each department, like midterms for English department, when papers are due and they stay up all night drinking Jolt and grading papers. And that's what the maintenance people never see. You teachers get all summer off. And they say, no, but you guys go to bed when you go home from here. We're staying up all night reading, grading, doing class prep and so on. But whatever, I said, think of that. And so we determined to take the English department out at their highest pressure time to be a blessing to them and to serve them. Well, we got reservations or went up to a restaurant up in Iron Mountain and a nice place. And one of the ladies, one of the single ladies, said, I want to tell you about a dream I had. She said, I got so scared when I heard you all were taking us out to dinner. I thought we were going to get fattened up to say you're fired. And she said, I had this dream that we went out and I didn't want to go to the table to get fired. So I locked myself in the ladies' room. And she said, Ardell Jaco was banging on the door. You come out of there. And so we had a good laugh on that. But I said, all we are trying to do is be a blessing and serve you with, let you know you're appreciated. We love you. And we thank you for the hard work that you're doing. It'd be a good project for you. How can you serve someone else? What can you do to maintain the atmosphere that you have in this ministry now? Keep that attitude of servitude. It's very, very noticeable. Well, I'll move on here. If you will answer them, share yourself with them. The key here is sharing yourself with people. If you will serve them and answer them. Ever see someone coming towards you and you want to hide? Oh, no. Again. And you're talking like, right, yeah. I'll catch up with you on that. And what is your body language saying? Your body language is saying, when are you getting it to the point I don't want you in my life? Rather than plant your feet and share yourself, answer them. I used to do what I call availability tours. I used to walk through campuses. It'd be in the grind or it'd be in the maintenance department. But I found out there were people who were needing to talk sometimes. And if they could grab you and take 5 or 10 minutes then, it at least gives an attitude of I care. And there are things that you get tired of dealing with, especially those who are in leadership. I remember, and I know as a president of a Bible college, every sending pastor and every sending parent and grandparent expects you to believe exactly as they believe on everything. And so you're always juggling and walking. But when the phones had cords on them, you know, I'd have a rut around my desk, the length of the cord that would go, answering questions. But one day, it kind of flicked my beak. I got a letter from a pastor wanted to know my position on Santa Claus. And it just didn't hit me right. So I dictated. Jen Schmidt was my secretary then. I said, he is an overweight man who has been very good to me through the years. And I said, don't send that. That was flesh. I said, I'm just tired of this. And you know, come time, okay, now one of the things you have to do and keep maintenance, okay, then I said, okay, I'm going to answer this biblically. So I went into Revelation. The ho-ho was the voice of many waters and the shiny buckles on the boots. So I really dug into her and laid out a good biblical response there. No, I didn't do that either. But you know, one of the hardest things to do sometimes is share yourself. You realize when you sit in church on Sunday morning, there are a lot of hurting people in there. A lot of hurting people. And sometimes sharing yourself, answering them. Even if you ask, how are you? You look a little down right now. Well, yeah, I really wish you would pray with me or pray for me. But sharing yourself with people, answer them. And think of ways that you can do that with people. Those of you who work out in the corporate world know how that business goes. But it becomes a very good thing. I'm going to be dealing, one of the things I'll be dealing with during this week of revival is the importance of maintaining proper relationships. Because Satan's attack will come in that area. And will little by little, the sweetness will begin to wane, and you will see a heart that is turned cold in that way. Answer them. And then thirdly, be my last point here, if you will speak good words unto them. The key here is speech or words. To me, if you know, on a corporate level, to me this made so much sense, so I thought, you know, those are three key leadership principles that you maintain to keep a happy spirit in your corporation, in your Christian school, in your church staff, whether it's a large operation, a small operation, if you will speak good words to them. Have you ever just gotten a note from someone with a few words on it? You read it, see who wrote it. You read it again, lay it down, pick it up and read it again. Something that took 10 seconds for someone to write. Love you. Your work is not unnoticed. You are appreciated. Wrap it around a Snicker bar. Speak good words. Encouraging words, it says in Chronicles, 2 Chronicles chapter 10. Speak encouraging words. Some people just need a good word. I remember back up in Beecher, Wisconsin, the boys' home, many of you are familiar with the boys' home that's up in that area. The Schroeder started. And the boys from the boys' home came to Faith Baptist Church in Beecher, where we attended. And I used to go out of my way to go and speak to those kids and make them, let them know they're loved and appreciated. And These were troubled kids who had to be sent there by their family. They were sent from Christian homes, but there was some real trouble in their soul and trouble in their spirit, and they needed that extra time away and that extra attention. And I remember one boy in that boys' home. He had a voice, a mellow voice. I mean, just unbelievable speaking voice. And I stopped him after church one day and I said, "Son, if I had your voice and you had a feather in your nose, we'd both be tickled." And I said, "I sound like sandpaper rubbing on glass." I said, "I've never been able to speak freely." I said, I came from a bad lisp and tongue-tied. And I said, "I'm never comfortable speaking." And I said, "You speak and it's just wonderful." I said, "Don't waste what God gave you." And that was a passing comment. Well, that boy ended up getting straightened out. He came to Northland, graduated, and then went and got master's work, and he taught Greek for us for quite a period of time. And he was getting another degree. I remember there with in our robes after he said, "You know, Doc O, I never told you this, but several years ago you stopped me in church when I was still in the boys' home. You told me God has given you a voice. Don't waste what God has given to you." And he said, that turned my life that day. It took me probably 30 seconds to stop him and tell him that. And I've had the privilege now twice of speaking up in their church. Another Northland grad have planted a church up in Moncton, New Brunswick, Canada. And a wonderful ministry, a beautiful new facility that is built up in there. And I think of that every time. What did it cost me to stop that boy and say some good words to him? You might see somebody who looks a little bit down. You say, "Do you realize you're loved here? Do you realize how much I appreciate the little things that you do? You think people don't notice?" Encouraging words. You know, Dr. Warren Wiersbe has the B series. I'm sure many of you over the years have read his B series. And his book on James is Be Wise. In chapter 3 of James, in his Be Wise devotional commentary, he said the tongue has three vital powers. And they said it's pictured in metaphors. The tongue has the vital power to direct, and the two metaphors are a bit in the horse's mouth and a rudder on a ship. And that little bit turns the entire horse's body, and that rudder, small compared to the size of the ship, turns about that whole direction of that ship. So the power of tongue to direct, you can direct people with your tongue, positively or negatively. You can use your words to direct people into God's will, away from God's will. You can turn them into bitterness, direct them into those areas. Second metaphor is the fire. The tongue is a fire. Fire in its rightful place produces warmth. Fire out of place is destruction. And a tongue out of its rightful place is very, very destructive. I remember one time, I remember Rod Bell one time preaching. We worked in the church plant when we were down in Bootleg Corner in Greenville, South Carolina. Said a lady came to him one time who had been gossiping about him, said she wanted to put her tongue on the altar. And if you knew Rod, he said, "Well, we're going to have to bring in a longer altar." And so I'm not sure if that was the right response there or not. But she got the point. And another lady, I've read this illustration where she had gone to her pastor and said, "Pastor, I've been gossiping about you." And he knew it. "And I want to make it right, ask your forgiveness." He said, "Yes, I'd like you to get your husband and like you to meet me at church 2 o'clock this afternoon after you've had your noon meal and bring a pillow with feathers in it. And when they got there, he had a ladder set up on the church, and he took that pillow from that lady and had a razor blade, and he cut the pillow and he shook it into the wind, and feathers scattered. And he came down off the ladder and said, "No, what I'd like you to do is go gather in all the feathers." She said, "Impossible." He said, "I can forgive you, and I do. But it's impossible to take back those words that have gone in their destructive ways." And what a reminder that is for us. The tongue set on fire of hell. And then last, tongue has power to delight. And the two metaphors there, the fig tree and the fountain. We can use our tongues to delight, to speak good words, encouraging words, praising words, uplifting words, words that would move a person from here to here, and words that would lift the heart of a person and the spirit of an individual, so that that person's heart is encouraged and that person is lifted, and the fig tree hungry soul is filled, and the bubbling fountain, the thirsty soul is quenched. And if we can use our words as a delight, because who is a wise man and endued with knowledge among you? Let him show out of a good conversation with meekness of wisdom. That which is from below is earthly, sensual, devilish. That which is from above is pure, gentle, easy to be entreated. And as we look at these very simple thoughts tonight, I picked this up on a plane going to speak at an educator's banquet, and I put the message away that I had, and I preached off a little piece of paper I had on the airline there, and I preached, how do we create a happy atmosphere? And I thought tonight, with the theme that you have, and I thought as a banquet, it would be a time of a jovial time, a happy time, and I thought this would be a fitting thing to put in at the beginning in our banquet. How do you continue to maintain the atmosphere that you have here? How do you continue to maintain that spirit? Each one of you committed to being a servant, to being available to share yourself with people, and to be able to speak good words. Right now, just think, who could you jot a very quick note? Ever get a note from your child, one of your children? I stumbled over a note yesterday I found from my son Stephen that was written years ago. I was going through some other material, and I put it in the drawer in my desk in the basement. And I thought, I remember reading that years ago, and what an encouragement that was. And I've looked through, I have a folder of notes sometimes. You pull out these notes that you've gotten from people over the years. And you know, those encouraging things. Those people were used of God to be a channel of good words and of serving and of sharing, unselfishly sharing for God's purpose and for God's glory. Happy are these thy servants. Isn't it interesting that a world ruler would have picked up on that? Look what he has here. He answered every tough question I gave him. I mean, the glamour and the glory and the whole, and his God is pouring this out on him. And you have happy servants. And I pray that we can take these few little thoughts tonight and say, Lord, help me to be able to speak good words and answer and serve, that others might be strengthened and others might be blessed, and the corporate body here would be blessed. But what did these people do? They went to the young men and said, Solomon, Rehoboam went to the young men and said, no, don't listen to that. You make your little finger thicker than your father's thigh. You lay it on these people. Don't get that servant mentality. And the rest is history. The thing went downhill to destruction. And then we know Solomon, inch by inch, when it is disobedience. God said, don't multiply horses. There'll be a false security for you. I'm your safety. Don't multiply wives, because they will turn your hearts to idolatry. And what did Solomon do? You can still go, and many of you have been in Israel tour, and you go to Solomon's stables. They're still there as you look down into Megiddo. Don't multiply horses. Don't multiply wives. I want to be your security. I want to be your point of worship. And when he disobeyed, he went big time. 700 wives and 300 combines. That's a big farm by anybody's standard. And so he just didn't minor go. I mean, he went big time. Jack Hiles didn't start bus ministry. I think Solomon did to get his wives to the mall on Friday. And but boy, that was a whole nother discussion. So, well, let's bow our heads together. Father, thank you for even these lessons that are tucked away in Old Testament, yet we see the results of following good advice or rejecting good advice. God, protect this ministry. God, as we look at tomorrow, as we talk to families and then go to the church body Sunday through Wednesday, God, give us your mind and your wisdom. God, we realize we can't work up anything called revival. God, this is your doing. Let us be servants. We can't cause. We want to be channels of your word and of your grace. God, do a work that no man can explain. I pray in Jesus' name. Amen.